White Rocket Entertainment.
The real war is between the living and the dead. And make no mistake, the dead are coming.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and this week I'm again joined by my co-host on the AU Wishbone Show and our semi-regular co-host on this show, John Ringer. Welcome back aboard, John.
Thanks for having me, Van. I'm very excited to be here.
Because tonight we're going to just do a State of Game of Thrones update podcast. We don't do a weekly Game of Thrones podcast. There are those out there, plenty of them for those of you that...
But starting today, daily.
We didn't talk about that before the show. So we just felt like with the momentous events that have been happening in the first four episodes, it is four, right?
Four, yeah.
That we needed to have a little chat about it. Now, you are just now catching back up to the show, right? Because you weren't able to get on at the very beginning, but you've got everything squared away now. And so you've watched like the first four, like what, within the last week?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's all fresh in your mind, whereas for me, it's spread out over like a month. So first up, we got to give the spoiler warning. If you haven't watched these four episodes, most of which has not appeared in the books yet, you better stop now and go watch episodes 1, 2, 3, and 4 of season 6, because that's what we're going to be talking about. And we're going to be talking about it in relation to the overall story, to the books, and kind of our speculation about where we think we're going, where they're going, and throwing in a little bit of what the guys on the full-time Game of Thrones show like to call the tinfoil, where they get into the, you know, the real speculation that gets a little out there. So we're going to talk.
Again, if you're just a TV show watcher and you don't want any spoilers from theory, the tinfoil theories or the book theories, then you should probably bail out at this point.
Bail out too, right? All right. Now, those of you that are left with us are some serious Game of Thrones watchers and/or readers. You don't have to read it or watch it.
And you need serious help.
Yeah. Why are you devoting this much of your brain to this totally fictional world? I don't know. There was a period there where I did it for the Middle Earth stuff for Tolkien, I first read Game of Thrones and then Clash of Kings and Storm of Swords all back to back to back in 2000-2001 when the third one had just come out.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is about 16 years now that this story, I've been waiting for this story to play out. And I think that's one of the reasons that I'm so excited, John, is that it finally seems to be gathering some momentum and playing out. And I'm not sure how much of that is the story as it was always meant to go, and how much of that is that we are off the books now. We're off the map. What do you think?
I think some of it is that we're off the books and off the map, but I think some of it is also that everybody involved, both George R. R. Martin and the TV showrunners, they hear Time's Winged Chariot hurrying near, and they know that they have very limited real estate to bring this thing home, and it's still way out there spread wide.
Yeah.
So they got to work hard to zoom in and bring people together and get the plot moving forward. They don't have time to waste on, you know, what one of my friends who read the books described as, you know, George R. R. Martin's travel log of you know, central Essos or whatever. So they got to move forward.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me in a much more drawn out way. Those of you out there who watched Babylon 5, there was a point where JMS, Joe Straczynski, who was the George R. R. Martin of Babylon 5, almost one-to-one relationship there, there was a point where they didn't think that they were going to get a fifth and final season of Babylon 5, and so Straczynski had to put everything to wrap up all the plot lines, basically, into season 4. Now, what that meant was that season 4 was just like bang, 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 bang. You know, like you had 3 seasons of slowly getting the pot boiling, you know, and slowly adding all the ingredients. And then you just get hit over the head with a hammer like every week in season 4. And that's kind of what would happen with Game of Thrones if they don't get things kind of moving somewhat toward the finish line, huh?
That's right. Well, they're just not going to make it.
Right, yeah. I mean, you'll get like the one episode at the end where like 50 things happen in 2 seconds each, you know. So they don't want that. I mean, this show is known for the slow burn, you know, in some cases literally. And and they don't want it to have to break its neck getting to the finish line in that last half season, I guess. So just think about what has happened so far, you know, this season. Most people have agreed with me. A couple of people have said, well, I don't know why you think the pacing is faster. Do you agree the pacing seems to be picking up in this season television-wise?
Yes.
Like, just think about this. You've had the death of Roose Bolton. You've had the death of the Iron Isles king, the Greyjoy king.
Balon Greyjoy.
Who cares? You've had
I care, believe me.
All right. You've had Theon and Sansa escape. You've had Jon come back. You've had just one.
Not just Theon and Sansa escape. They escape. Brienne
and Pod.
And they made it from Winterfell to the Wall.
To the Wall. And we finally got Sansa and Jon together. Sansa and Jon in this last episode finally encountering each other and hugging and being together seems like the first moment of reunion since they ripped everything apart in the first season. Has there been any moment like that for the kids, really, since that first season, since they all got... I mean, Arya hadn't gotten back with any of them.
I think there was a moment with Arya where she was near one of them,
mm-hmm.
near Sansa or something, but they couldn't get together.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But, I mean, this... It's like they all got scattered to the four winds toward the end of season 1. And this was the first just, we're back together, it's time to get together and kick ass.
Well, and just enjoy, be happy, you're back with your family a little bit.
A happy moment, yeah.
And we could talk about individual storylines a little bit. As a character, Sansa has really been through the crap again and again and again, being taken advantage of and used and pushed around, used as a pawn by all these people because there was no one who... She had her back, who could protect her.
Yeah.
And now she has Brianna Pod watching her back, and she has, you know, John watching her back. And so she's in a much different position and probably is going to sleep better than she has, you know, in years.
Yeah. It was interesting, too, that it was she was the one that was urging military action, and John was like,
John's like, I've been through a lot.
Poor John. He's just like, she's like, we must gather the banners and march on Winterfell and reclaim our heritage. And John's like, yeah, we could watch Netflix and, you know, make some popcorn here and just hang out with the Black Brothers. You know, we could do that, I guess.
Well, but it's also like John has like, you know, I showed up here. Everybody hated me. I got the crap beat out of me. I got made the Lord Commander Steward. We went north of the Wall. I had to pretend to betray him and fight Corric Halfhand. And then I joined the Wildlings. And then I defected from the Wildlings and warned everybody of their attack. And then I fought off their attack. And then I got elected Lord Commander. And then I, went to Hardhome and fought the undead there, and I came back and I let the wildlings through the wall, and then my guys all hated me and they stabbed me. So I've been a little busy and it's been kind of crappy, and that's kind of how John feels, like, okay, now I'll go off and do this Winterfell thing, I guess.
And I hung this kid too, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I sent my friend Sam away.
Yep. Who doesn't even know he's gotten killed, much less that he's back. He's gotten better. So, what did you make? We got to talk about that first. What did you make? While we're talking about John, let's go ahead and knock that one out. What did you make about the resurrection of John? Because here, let me throw this to you, and then you tell me what you made out of it. You don't do that unless it means something, right? Unless it changes something or accomplishes something. Otherwise, it was just a stunt, right? If you kill John and then bring him back from the dead, it has to be for a reason. It has to accomplish something story-wise. And I think that the main thing everybody looks at is that it frees him from his vows that, you know, he said, my watch is ended or whatever. He said that at the end mm-hmm. of the episode. Or the second, whichever. So there's that. But beyond that, what did that accomplish? What was it for? And how much did he really change?
I don't think we know how much he changed yet, but I think it was for a couple of things. One was it freed him from his vows of the Night's Watch, so he can go do his own thing. And but I guess I kind of wanted him to stay with the Night's Watch and be the guy who's kind of leading the fight against the undead, because I don't trust any of those other idiots to do it and do it well. I think without him, they'll get overrun, you know, like some guys waving at the border with, you know, stone snow cones or something. So from a dramatic narrative perspective, it frees him up to go do other things, like team up with Sansa and go rally the other northern lords to go kill the Boltons and retake Winterfell. And it frees him up to, you know, he could go meet some nice girl and marry her or whatever if he wants to. And it also, you know, there's these other story arcs with John that are coming that were alluded to in the last episode also, which they haven't really brought home yet. We'll get put on the tinfoil thing. Right. But we don't know if he's changed. I mean, I think we recorded a podcast last year after the end of the season to talk about what we thought was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And we talked about John coming back and Melisandre being there. Mate would seem pretty obvious that that's what was going to happen, that she was going to be involved. But I really like the way they did it, where, you know, she had kind of lost her faith and she tried, but she didn't think it worked, and everybody left the room, and then he just woke up.
Yeah, that that was pretty neat. I the other thing that puzzled me about it is how much of it was her, because I just get the sense that, are they just going to say, well, she just kind of got lucky and had more power than she knew she did, and it, or is there higher power, or there higher powers at work that wanted John back, or and intervene, and it just seems like Melisandre was the agent? Or, I mean, it just seemed like, you know, nobody was more surprised than she was that it actually worked, and she didn't even know what she was doing half the time of it.
Well, and it's interesting because I was listening to somebody else talk about this, and what they said was, And I remembered this once they said it. The other guy who did this, remember, there was the band, the Brotherhood Without Banners, this kind of Robin Hood band.
Yeah.
They're originally sent out by Eddard Stark when he was Hand of the King to go hunt down some of sent to hunt down the Mountain and his guys who were destroying innocent farmlands and that kind of stuff. And they turned into these kind of rebel band after all the Starks and everybody got killed, and they were fighting against all the lords to protect the small folk, basically. And Beric Dondarrion was the leader of that band. The priest was named Thoros of Myr, and he was kind of a drunk, foppish kind of priest. And he had lost his faith, but when Dondarrion died, he basically brought him back. But it was, he had lost his way and his faith too, just like Melisandre did. But it was his bringing him back was more about, you know, wanting his friend to be back, wanting this person to be back, than any kind of display of spiritual power. And so it was more of that kind of way with Melisandre too, where she had kind of lost her faith and lost her way with the stuff she could do, the other magic she could do. But she was basically begging, you know, for John to come back at the end. So,
yeah, it's going to be really interesting what happens to Melisandre when Davos finds out what happened while he was away from Stannis's army.
When Stannis finds out she burned the little girl?
When Davos finds out, yeah.
Oh, when Davos finds out that she made Stannis burn the girl, it's over for her.
It's on like Donkey Kong, man.
Well, and not just that. You saw the scene where Brienne came up to both of them, and she was looking at him like, I may just kill both of you because I still blame you for the Renly thing.
Right. Yeah. Brienne was just towering over Melisandre and just giving her the ugly eye. That was awesome. Melisandre just kind of shrinking down. That was
And we had Brienne and the wildling leader Tormund kind of giving each other the eye, like, who's the big dog in the yard here?
Well, I think that it was he was like, hey, baby. Whoa. they don't call me a wildling for nothing, baby. Would you like to see the other side of my wall, baby? You
know, all right.
I don't know what that means. It just seems like something Tormund
Giant's Bane.
Tormund would say, yeah. By the way, I found out the other day why the giant is called 1-1. Do you know this?
Go ahead. I've forgotten.
The story is that George R. Martin is a big New York Giants fan, and he likes Phil Sims, who was number 11.
Mm.
So the giant is 1-1.
I like that.
Yeah, there you go. It's a nice NFL.
Although I love George R. Martin. He should spend less time worrying about the Giants and more about the books. So.
You just want him in servitude, chained to his computer and typing away 24 hours a day, right?
That's where all you authors should be.
Give him electroshock. Hey, I'll tell you right now, the Sentinels readers out there have been fussing at me for 4 years now, but I'm back fast at work on number 8, so we're going to bring this trilogy in for a landing with number 9, and that'll be, I'll feel like I've done my duty for a while. Let's see. So we're moving. Yeah, we've left the books. There's still stuff happening, though, that's in the books, right? It's kind of a mixed bag right now.
Yes, there are things that are in the books that have not happened yet. And there were things in this episode that happened in the books, you know, in kind of out of sequence. For example, the letter, the pink letter that John gets from Bolton was in the books, but it was before Sansa ever shows up. So,
well, let's talk about that for right a second, because I had it on my list of things I wanted to throw out real quick. My understanding, I only cursorily read Dances with Dragons. I've read all the others thoroughly, but Dances with Dragons I kind of skimmed through, honestly, because the TV show was on by then, and I wanted to be surprised by the show, honestly. I can go back and read the book anytime. So my understanding in about that was that there was a lot of evidence that Ramsay did not write the pink letter.
There was some fan theories that somebody else wrote the letter to motivate John to go to Winterfell.
Okay. But it seems pretty clear in the TV show version that Ramsay definitely wrote that letter, don't you think?
100%.
I mean, when he says, I want my wife back, I'm like, yeah, that's him. That's got to be him.
Well, and he knew that he had Rickon, and who else knew that it could write that with his seal?
All right, let's divert again into the reader theories and the watcher theories. The people that had Rickon were the Starks' most absolute trusted bannermen, right?
In the books, Asha took Rickon and they actually went to an island called Skagos, which is off the coast of the north. And actually, she made this comment about having seen worse. The cannibals live there. And so she and Rickon had been living on this island with these crazy cannibal natives since they escaped. And they had come back at some point, I guess, and they were living with the Umbers, who were, you know, the guy who got his hand bit off by the dog by
Grey Wind.
Right. Rob's dog. Yeah. And said, you know, then you're worthy of being king or whatever. So that guy's son basically showed up to ally himself with Ramsay and brought Rickon and turned him over. In the books, there is a northern conspiracy thing where they start, all the northern lords start working together against Bolton. Everybody except the Karstarks, who are never going to, you know, go back with the Starks again.
Yeah.
But so that, I think that's where the TV show is going in terms of the, they're going to be some kind of northern lords who pretend to be friends with Ramsay, but maybe they were not really working with him.
So do we think that this bringing in Rickon is totally legit handing him over, or is it part of a plot?
I think it's got to be legit because Ramsay's a loony, yeah, and he might kill Rickon right there, or yeah, you know, or flay his skin off. So I think it has to be legit because you would not turn a, you know, anybody that you thought anything of over to somebody like Ramsay Bolton. And so I think that guy, now maybe that guy gets the rest of his house, you know, does away with him and the Umbers, and some other guy emerges as a leader for them. But
well, what was interesting was that he refused to bend the knee or take,
yes,
or anything like that,
that. That part made me think he's not loyal to Ramsay.
Right.
And so maybe the plot is the thing. Maybe it's not really Rickon. You know, maybe Rickon's safe somewhere else. It's some other boy, and they're setting Ramsay up.
Yeah.
So that's possible, too.
But then Asha tried to kill Ramsay in this last episode and came close.
Because she knew she was going to die, and maybe that was the plan, the point of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Was to get her close to him.
Maybe so. It was almost. So now Rickon, well, one way or another, Rickon is now in his evil clutches. And he's the only, really the only trump card other than controlling Winterfell that Ramsay has.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the fortress, and he's got the, not the heir, because, well, nobody really knows where Bran is. So he's, you know, theoretically, on the show, they haven't said that Jon was legitimized by Rob either, you know.
Yeah, that point's coming up at some point.
So you really still got several Stark, you mean basically every Stark is still alive of that generation, right? We haven't lost any of them. They just,
well, no,
except for Rob. Well, obviously Rob, but I mean, we've still got both of the girls, and we've still got both of the younger boys, and we still got John. So
that's
there's still five. Now we'll get into who John really is in a minute, but okay. So, what do you see coming up as we go further into this season that's going to play out? And I mean, you know, if you ask me that question, it's kind of hard because I would have said, oh, if there's six episodes left, then three things are going to happen. But dang, I mean, when I was listing the things that have, the big dramatic things that have happened already, I failed to mention they had a coup in Dorne.
Mm-hmm.
They overthrew Julian Bashir.
Martell.
Yeah, so it's like every kingdom is in turmoil all over again. We know in King's Landing, you got the religious fanatics running around. In you know, the only place that's really kind of stable right now, honestly, is the Eyrie, where of all people, it's Littlefinger that has things stable. Whoever saw that?
But at the end of that episode, he said, "Get the army ready. We're marching to Winterfell."
Yeah, man. See, I mean, I feel like in two episodes, we're going to have a completely different status quo again with everything. I mean, we're about to have the King's Moot up in the Iron Isles. So within like two episodes, you could have what's her name running the Iron Isles. You could have
okay, keep going.
It looks like the Martells are about to march into King's Landing and go after the church and bust out the queen. You know, every place is in super turmoil right now. You know, honestly, the one place that's never the least bit been touched by turmoil is Casterly Rock, because they keep sending people out that get involved in stuff, but nobody ever goes to Casterly Rock, where the Lannisters' headquarters is.
Well, and then the Reach, the Highgarden, where the Tyrells are from, has been pretty,
right.
But they've lost. They had a lot of people die in Battle of Blackwater and some of these other big battles. So they've lost a lot of people that way.
But they had a lot of army and they had a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to switch you over while we're talking about King's Landing for a minute. There's two things there I think worth talking about. One is the church versus the state, basically, and Cersei having just endured what the sparrows inflicted on her. She probably for her own selfish reasons. I don't think there's any altruism about Tommen's wife, you know, at all.
No.
I think that Cersei is using the Tyrells and the Martells confused. I think Cersei is using the Tyrells' concern for their daughter to as a lever to make them move against the Septon and the Sparrows, so that A, she doesn't have to, but B, she gets what she wants anyway, which is them all killed and kicked out of power, right?
Well, that's right. It'll weaken their forces, and it'll kill the religious fanatics, and it'll make them look like the bad guys to the religious people. And, oops, accidentally, if Margaery and her brother get killed during the escape, then oh well.
It's just win-win-win for Cersei. This is like the smartest thing she's ever done by like a million miles. On this.
Hey, it hasn't happened yet.
But, if everything goes according to plan, which we know it won't, it would be the smartest and the most effective thing that Cersei's ever done. I love seeing her trying to get control of the small council and finding a way after only one episode, right? The second episode, she got them sit back down, you know. So I just don't have a lot of regard for Kevin Lannister and the and this current incarnation of the small council, do you?
Well, in the books, he's very competent. He's not his brother.
Yeah.
But he's competent, and he gets the – while she's incarcerated and right after, he gets the realm kind of back on a firm footing again.
Yeah. And in the books, doesn't like Varys kill him or something?
Yes. This is another big difference in the books and TV shows. Varys is back in King's Landing and basically pops out of a secret door and shoots him with a crossbow.
He said something like my understanding was he said something like, "You're competent enough to actually get everything back together again, and I can't have that."
That's right, because he's secretly, you know, we believe supporting the Targaryens. So,
Varys comes back from what he's doing right now.
Well, in the books, he never gets all the way to Meereen.
Oh,
you know, he just takes Tyrion across to Pentos or whatever, where Tyrion got, you know, was in the wine barrel, or whatever, and then he comes back. So he's never gone that long.
Oh, okay. You know what they grow in Pentos that makes them their cash crop?
Grapes?
Pentos beans.
Oh, my gosh.
So the whole bit of Varys and Tyrion's traveling roadshow and co-regioning the empire together, that doesn't even happen in the books.
No, and the Tyrion roadshow is a thousand pages longer than it was.
Yeah,
because in the books, he literally just got there.
Yeah, he hadn't even had the meeting with Dany yet, right?
No,
so
they had the games where she's fooling the dragon, but he didn't get to meet her.
Man, see, so I gotta be honest. I'm enjoying the TV show. A, going on its own direction, and B, moving things along.
Yeah, I'm enjoying that too. And I mean, I love Tyrion. He's probably my favorite character. And I love the Tyrion and Varys running the city again. I mean, those two working together and they're kind of the interplay of those characters and Tyrion out, you know, in his element again. The scene with him loosing the dragons I thought was great.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, this is the thing, as I've said all along, is I know that the purists will probably decry them going off the script and going on their own with the TV show, but I've said it's fine with me because when the TV show is over, I can go back and read the books and get another equally legitimate version of the story that that I didn't get in the TV show. It's like getting to watch Lord. It's like getting to do Lord of the Rings twice, you know, and getting a different outcome.
Well, that's right, and I think
works for me.
If the book ending, if the TV ending is great and everybody loves it and it's perfect, then George Martin will use that as the core of his thing. But he also, consciously and subconsciously, he's going to change things as he writes the book based on what happens in the TV show. And so I think there's going to be times when the TV show goes down a certain road and he's going to zig when they zag and there's going to be surprises in the book. So I look forward to that, and I mean, I wished I could have read the books first. Yeah. I would, you know, if we haven't talked about this, but for me, the book reader, I've up to this point, I've had this very secure feeling that I knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And so these seasons, like these episodes, John coming back, Sansa showing up there, you know, Daenerys with what she did in the last episode, I had no idea any of that stuff was going to happen. And it's a little bit terrifying.
Well, like I said, I read the first four when they came out, more or less. And when Dances with Dragons came out, I just felt like I wanted to go with the TV show. So, you know, the Red Wedding, I knew it was going to happen. I was waiting for it and waiting for it and waiting for it. And it was kind of anticlimactic for me because it was just seeing something played out just like you that we already knew. And so when last season started, I'm like, oh, now there's going to be some stuff I don't know about. But, man, this season there's this neat feeling that we're all on common ground together for once. Nobody has a leg up on anybody else. I got to feel like even George R. R. Martin's watching the TV show and going, huh, how about that?
We go back down there and write that in.
That's not bad. Yeah. So, well, we need to talk about Daenerys. Danny, her long slog around the Slaver's Bay region, it's kind of frustrating that she's done all these things and then they've gone back and reconquered every city but the one she's in now, or was in until recently. But now she's gone out and brought the and basically conquered Dothraki Nation. What do you make of all this? This is just amazing.
It is, but in the books, there's too much going on there in the Marine, the city she's in. And there's too many characters coming from Westeros to there. And there's, you know, he's Martin and is writing about the series. It's called it the Marine Knot because it's too much happening there. He's got to untangle it to move forward. Right. And what they've done in the TV show in just a few episodes is, you know, Dany was captured. She, you know, plotted a way to escape and take advantage of escaping, and she did it in this big dramatic fashion so that now she has the entire Dothraki army, you know, working for her. And, you know, she has, I don't know how many there are, 100,000 or whatever, yeah. Dothraki, and she's going to go down there. She wants to wipe those cities out and the slavers, then she can. And then quickly, you know, move the Dothraki and the rest of her army around across the continent to get to a place where she can enter Westeros. So my goal is at the end of this season, I want her getting on a boat to go to Westeros. That's what I want.
We've been waiting on that for years, man, for 20 years.
That's what I want. I want boats.
Boats. Well, they all burned up for some reason, though.
Well, but now she can, I mean, with the Dothraki, she can go overland, you know, and they could be foragers for the rest of her army and stuff. And they can get to, they can go to Volantis if they want to, or Pentos, and then go from there.
We really are looking at a situation, I'm afraid, in the last season where an army of Dothraki and Unsullied, led by Dany and Jon Snow, fight the ice zombies. That's what I see coming. I've knocked him out, ladies and gentlemen. He can't comprehend that.
You're taking away everybody in Westeros from that, but.
Oh, they got to kill them first. I mean, you know. But you just still got to feel like all the stuff with Cersei and all the stuff with Jon Arryn and all that, it's just a sideshow for when the apocalyptic war of the gods comes at the end, you know, fire versus ice. But now Dany's got a big army. So between the Unsullied and the Dothraki, she's got like the army and the Marines or something. I don't know. So it's pretty amazing. I mean, you had to love the way that all played out, though, where, you know, she had that utter confidence. She's talking to all the cows, you know, telling them, you know, I planned how to conquer the world while you guys are sitting here planning what village to rob, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, well, you didn't conquer the world. She's like, well, I'm not done yet, Mr. Smarty Pants, and I'm about to set your butt on fire. I will bring it on. And she does. And we find out that the Targaryens, or at least Dany, is indeed fireproof, which takes us to R plus L equals J. Wouldn't it have been interesting if they had tried to burn John's body up at the wall, up at Castle Black, and it hadn't burned?
That would have been weird.
why do you why am I saying that they would not burn John? That John's body wouldn't burn, John?
Well, because the R plus L equals J theory means that he's a Targaryen.
Uh-huh. And you know what that makes him? That makes him Dany's nephew, if it's true.
That's so weird.
Yeah, he'd be Dany's nephew because Rhaegar is her oldest, was her oldest brother. And he apparently was, you know, the theory is that actually he and Ned's sister...
Lyanna Stark.
He kidnapped her, but I get the sense that it wasn't just so much kidnapping as she didn't mind, right?
I think there was some more of a loping.
Yeah, they were kind of... She didn't really want to go off and marry Robert, and honestly, I can't blame her. She wanted to marry... She was supposed to marry Robert.
He didn't always look like a drunken
I know.
Slob.
Well, no, he had to look like Thor at some point because he killed Rhaegar.
With a hammer.
Yeah. So, you know, and Rhaegar was... big dude, is what I understand, you know. So this is like Thor versus Captain America, Rhaegar being Captain America and Robert being Thor, and he knocked him out, put him down. So we got that scene at the Tower of Joy with the Knight of the Dawn or whatever his name is.
Arthur Dayne, who is the Sword of Mourning.
Sword of Mourning, that's right. We got that scene. What did you make of all that and the fact that Bran got to see some of it but didn't get to see as much as he wanted to?
Well, and he didn't get to see the reveal, which is what we all want to see, the payoff of that scene, which right. is she's in the tower with the baby John, and we find out who his dad is. So that was a great scene. I mean, that's been referred to a lot in the books, that last battle of the war. When Eddard Stark and Howland Reed and the other guys came to, you know, rescue his sister, and the two members of the Kingsguard were there to protect her.
Yeah.
And it was the other part that was great was the fact that Eddard Stark didn't beat him, that Howland Reed stabbed him through the back of the neck with a knife and saved Eddard Stark's life.
Had a cheat.
But also, though, like, history isn't this big heroic tale. Again, and Martin loves to squash that belief in people that history is this romantic tale that works out perfectly where the hero wins, you know, the dramatic sword fight and beats the bad guy. It didn't happen like that. The hero, Eddard Stark, that everybody believes is this great guy, won because his best friend got up off the ground or he was stabbed and stabbed the other guy in the back.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean... So that was a cool scene, and it certainly sets things up. You know, everybody's talking about how at the end when Bran calls out his dad's name, he turns around. The Sean Bean as a young guy turns around, and I don't know how much to put on that. I think it's not saying there's going to be time travel or anything. I think it's just – I think they were trying to say that his connection with his dad is so strong that he actually thought he heard him for a second. But I don't you think he's going to influence history beyond that?
I don't think he can change history. However, I think that Bran can travel through the Weirwood Trees, his consciousness, and influence current events by communicating with people.
Okay. Well, here's the one that I thought was interesting. Somebody suggested that way back when the kids first found the direwolves, Ghost was not with the other wolves. Ghost being the white one, the albino. The
mm-hmm.
And John heard something, and everybody else said, no, that was just the wind. There's nothing. And John goes over and looks, and he finds Ghosty sitting there curled up in a ball, and he adopts Ghost. And somebody suggested maybe Bran goes back to that moment and sees Ghost over there, and is like, John, the white wolf over here, yo. And that's how John found Ghost.
That's nice. I'm not spending any... You know, Bran has a lot of important things to do. That's, you know, I'm not sweating that one.
I'm a big Ghost fan. He's my favorite wolf, and he always has been. And I like old Ghosty. So I like when he gets to come out and growl at somebody and scare the bejesus out of him.
How many dire wolves are still alive?
Let's see. Well, starting at the bottom, Rickons is apparently dead. That was apparently Shaggy Dog that had his head chopped off.
Mm-hmm.
Brand's dog is Summer. Is he still alive? I think. Don't they have him?
I thought he was at the cave with them.
Okay. And I want to ask you about that in just a minute. Let's put a bookmark there. Arya chased Nymeria away so she would be safe from Joffrey. So she's still roaming around somewhere.
She's in the forest in the central part of Westeros, leading a big pack of wolves and killing people.
Awesome. I didn't know that, but that is so awesome. Good for Nymeria. Lady is dead. They got her head chopped off.
Yep. Grey Wind is dead.
Grey Wind is dead, and Ghost is alive and hanging out at Castle Black.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all of them. So there's about half and half, roughly. I think a little more alive than dead. Now, I wanted to ask you that. Bran in the tree with...
The three-eyed raven?
Yeah. God, I can't think of anybody's name anymore here in my old age. Max von Sydow.
Yes.
Now, I would hang out for days in a tree with Max von Sydow if I got to hang out in a tree with Max von Sydow. So I get it. But what is the deal? For those that don't know, like me, what is going on with people in a tree and a woman that looks like a tree and they're seeing the past? And I just go with it, but I have no clue what that's all about.
Okay, a couple things. The little people that look like trees are the children of the forest. And they're kind of the ancient elf beings that have been in this continent for thousands of years before human beings showed up. And the weirwood trees, those white trees, like the one in the heart wood in Winterfell and in other castles and all over the north and all over the lot of Westeros, are basically magically connected to the children of the forest and to this one place. The old guy is actually a famous figure from history. We may learn this later. From Targaryen times. And he went up there because he got this calling to go do this. And by connecting himself to the roots, he can send his consciousness into the weirwood trees and basically see out of the trees to see what they have seen. And somebody made a good analogy of the day. They compared it to the Avatar and the trees in Avatar the movie.
Yeah.
Like where they upload their consciousness or whatever, but it has all their memories in it. And so it has basically everything the trees have ever seen can be accessed by this people. And it's because Bran has the ability to ward, but he also has this green seer ability. Okay. So Bran is the only person who can do this among the modern generation, the only person in Westeros who could do this. And so they need him to become kind of the next three-eyed raven or whatever, which basically his job is going to be, I think, to see through the trees and to communicate with people and to learn the lessons from history and then to communicate those to Jon or whoever to help them ultimately in the battle against the White Walkers.
Yeah, there's kind of two kinds of characters. There's the ones like Sam and Bran who go to gain knowledge to help out. And then there's the ones like Sansa and Arya and Jon who just go through a lot of ordeals to become tougher and harder people. Danny's the same way, you know? It's kind of like you're either on a quest for knowledge or you're on a kind of a beat you down and build you back up journey.
That's fair.
Yeah.
But so it is one of the more out there, because it's also that, remember, that tree is hundreds of miles north of the wall.
Oh, they're so, that far north of the wall?
Yes. Oh, they're way north of the wall.
Wow, okay.
So they can't get back. So that's the other problem. You know, the boy is dead. The girl, Mira Reed, is still there with him. And she's sad because she can't go home. You know, she knows that she can't leave Bran. But even if Bran's still crippled and they have Hodor there with him and the dog, the wolf, but they couldn't make it back to the south without getting killed by the whites at this point. So they're stuck there.
They're behind enemy lines.
Yes, they're behind enemy lines. And the whites, you know they're there. But they can't get in. So.
Oh. Why can't they get in?
Magic.
Okay.
I mean, that's the Children of the Forest magic protects the cave where they live in. So.
Well, let's see. Last couple of things here as we wrap up. Before we get into kind of looking forward, we talked a little bit about John. I still feel like John could have come back as a zombie. He could have come back as a part wolf. He could have been inside Ghost's head and come back. There's a lot of things they could do, but he came back kind of the same. And so I'm really just kind of keeping my eye on John to see what becomes of him, since he didn't seem to change that much yet. And I just was pointing out, I was going to say this a while ago, when Dany crosses the narrow sea with her giant Dothraki army and Unsullied army, the fact that her nephew might be in charge by that point may be all that saves Westeros from getting bulldozed by the Dothraki. So they may be awfully glad that Jon is her nephew. It's an interesting situation. I wonder what Drogon is up to, the big black dragon. We saw him fly away and leave Dany there, and then we haven't seen any hair in a head of him.
I think he's still out there in that same area where she and the Dothraki are, and I think he's going to show back up at some point. That's the other thing, just besides getting the army, that she has to master the dragons. And this is, again, where Tyrion is going to come in valuable, because he spent his whole life reading about dragons.
Yeah.
For example, I think he's going to have some understanding about how to – I'm not spoiling anything here, I don't think. I think he has some understanding from books about how to make a saddle for a dragon.
Yeah, because he made a saddle for Bran, didn't he?
Exactly. And so it's that kind of practical knowledge that he's going to put to use. For example, he's going to make saddles for the dragons so they can control them better.
And we already know they can fly on them, because Dany flew on the back of Gon. And, of course, Tyrion's getting along well with the other two because he unchained them.
That's right.
So, yeah, everything's kind of falling together for that. I did like that, with just a little help from her two boy toys, Dany was able to free herself and take command of the Dothraki without any dragons at all, right? I mean, that just showed it was her own volition, her own power. She didn't need the dragons to come in and rescue her and make her seem strong. She did it all by herself without the dragons anywhere around.
Well, and it's just like the scene where she took control of the Unsullied. She basically conned the Masters into giving her command of the army, and then she basically turned around and said, kill everybody. And so that was her using her guile and her intelligence and her, command of the situation to do the hard things and to make that leap to take control. And she did it here again. So,
yeah, she really is an impressive character. I enjoy. I keep thinking we're going to see Sam and Gilly and little Sam come rolling in to whatever little tiny principality Sam's dad is in charge of. And I'm just wondering what his dad's going to think when Sam comes rolling up with a girl and a baby and saying, hey, I killed a zombie all by myself.
There's a whole bunch there. I mean, well, because Sam's dad told him you could never be a maester, that we don't wear chains.
Oh, so he's doing this against the wishes of his dad.
Oh, yes.
Has the book gotten past this?
No. But see, he gets there, but I don't think he's taken them to his family yet.
Okay. Well, he's taken them to his family in the dang TV show, and he doesn't...
No, but he's going to take them to his family, but I think he literally just, like, rolls up in the harbor at the end of the book.
Okay. Just because I'm just... Imagine his dad freaking out. This is a guy that sent him off to the wall for no reason other than you're not tough enough. So, you know,
his dad may be off in the books. His dad is off helping restore order to the middle part of Westeros in the army the Tyrell army. So
very good. All right. Well, last thing then, where do you think this all goes from here? I mean, how much do we want to speculate about the future?
Well, we've speculated some of the future in our last episode. I think you got Daenerys and the Dothraki. I think she's going to come back to Slaver's Bay and clean up that mess and then move on from there quickly. The other question is, you know, the Iron Islanders, the Greyjoys, the guy who killed the old king, Euron, I think the pirate kind of guy, he's going to play a big role in the next few episodes or the rest of the season, I think, causing problems for other people. And I think, you know, that, and actually that could be the unwinding of your, what you thought was Cersei's great plan, is because as soon as he shows up and starts raiding that the West Coast, basically the Tyrells, you'd be like, yeah, we're sending our army home. And then it all goes apart or whatever. So,
So,
the interesting thing is going to be, you know, Littlefinger and his army, and Jon rallies the other, and Sansa rally the other northern nobles, and they, maybe they get Winterfell back, or there's a big battle at Winterfell or a siege. I mean, you know, everybody at this point, we just want to see Ramsay Bolton killed, you know, painfully as possible. So.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's hard to predict because it's all happening so fast now.
Mm-hmm. But they can't. He can't go away too quickly, because then what else is there in the north to worry about other than the whites? I mean, you got the wildlings still. And this is the other political problem that John has, is the northern lords won't ally with the wildlings. They'll ally with John and Sansa, but they don't want the wildlings on their territory.
Right. They're like the Palestinians, and nobody
wants. Yeah, that's it. That's great. You want to use them as an army, but they're not walking across my land.
Man, yeah. It's just interesting how in the first couple of books and first couple of seasons, everybody had their army, and there was a giant multi-army war, and then everything kind of shook out, and now it's all about to happen again, it seems like.
And I think we haven't talked about Arya a lot, but I think she goes through her assassin training at some point, and then for the rest of this year, and then at some point they're going to send her on a mission to kill people. And I think down the road she's going to go back to Westeros to be killing people there for them. So,
yeah, and that's the question, is will she get sent to King's Landing to kill anybody?
At some point, absolutely, that's actually happening.
What if they actually order her to go kill Cersei or something?
That'd be like Christmas. I'm not sure it's going to be that easy.
Arya's like, you got it. Not a problem.
Well, or they order, the challenge is going to be they're going to order her to kill somebody else while Cersei's in the room or whatever. And you know what I'm saying?
What if they order her to kill Jon or Sansa or something like that? I mean, then you'll find out if she's really nobody, no one.
That's right. We know she's not nobody. At some point, she's going to take their training and leave and go use their ninja skills and face-changing and stuff to go kill the people she wants to kill.
Yeah. Although that list has gotten a little bit shorter now.
It has, but there's still people on it. Yeah. And if she knew about Ramsay, he'd be on the list too.
Yeah, and the mountain has come back for more killing. So
that's right. She thinks he's dead, and he's not.
So well, sort of.
you don't want any part of him.
Last thing, are we going to get a Clegane Bowl?
Yes.
You think we will?
Is 100%.
Is the Hound still alive?
The Hound is still alive. He's in a monastery, basically. He's kind of reformed his life. Okay. And but at some point, and it could be this upcoming battle with the Faith that brings him out.
Right.
It could also be in the books. There's a long, they're searching for Sansa, and Brienne actually, I think, comes near to encountering him. So, but I think it's going to be at some point Sandor is going to show up and kill his brother for the Faith militant.
Does that mean do you think Brienne actually killed Stannis? Because if she didn't, isn't that two different people she has seemingly killed that are actually still alive?
Yes, but I think she killed Stannis. I mean, they didn't show it, and that's weird. But there's no way he's still alive. I don't think. I think he's dead. I think here's what's going to happen. Is they're going to have the actual trial by combat for Cersei's crimes, and the church is going to appoint Sandor Clegane as their champion.
That would be awesome. Because Cersei would be all like, yeah, I got the mountain. I have the undead mountain. Hoo-hoo. And here comes Sandor. Here comes the Hound. And she'd be like, whoa. Wow. It'd be kind of a redo of the one where he fought the guy from Dorne, the snake dude.
Mm-hmm. Oberyn Martell.
Yeah. But this time.
Which absolutely was one of the high points of the show.
Yeah.
Just that battle, and also the stakes with it being, you know, Tyrion's trial by combat to decide his fate. So.
Yeah. All right. Any other things we've missed before we wrap up tonight on our mid, not even mid season? So much is happening so fast. We had to do a preemptive pre mid season show to talk about it.
Well, if we miss something, we'll get it on tomorrow's show.
I love it.
No, but I do want to come back, you know, maybe a third of the way again through the season after episode 8 or something like that and catch back up and see what we think about stuff.
Sounds good. All right. Well, the Rocket's going to get on out of here for another week or so, and I hope you guys enjoyed your Game of Thrones Tinfoil Edition podcast. Be sure to visit WhiteRocketBooks.com for more fun stuff like this. And otherwise, we will see you guys down the road.
Valar Morghulis.
Griffin, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.